We record this episode with the Ukrainian Leadership Academy, organized as a part of the Peace Support Ukraine project with the support of UNPONTEPER and PATRIR.
For us, Ukraine is part of Europe as much as Italy or Germany is part of Europe.
We are not here to help Ukrainians. Ukrainians can pretty much help themselves. I have seen it coming a lot from youth, and that's incredibly empowering and I think inspiring for European audiences as well.
Why we wake up every morning? Why we do what we do? Pretty much every country in Europe has been an empire, and it's been a failed empire. And we have an imperialist and colonialist past. And we feel that Ukraine has to be part of Europe because we need to preserve freedom and democracy.
At the same time, you cannot head towards the future without having the difficult conversations to heal from the past.
When you understand that life is stronger than anything.
Вітаю, друзі! Ви на подкасті GPR, і це черговий епізод в рамках співпраці з Українською академією лідерства, і це другий епізод англійською мовою, тому я закликаю вас поширювати цей епізод серед своїх друзів-іноземців і розповідати їм якомога більше про те, чим живе зараз українська молодь. Hi guys, you are listening to GPR podcast, Ukrainian podcast about young people and challenges they are facing with. And I remember that we are creating this podcast and this special episode a season with our friends from Ukrainian Leadership Academy. And we already made a podcast, like episode about problems and about challenges and about bridges between Ukrainian and European youth with Yuri Manilov and Ulyana Kashapa. If you are interested in this podcast, you can listen and I will add it into description of our podcast. And we were wondering that it would be great to have a possibility to communicate with people from Europe, from other countries, and ask them what they think about Ukrainian youth and about European youth and about our collaboration. So today's my guest. They came from abroad, as I understood, and it is Laura, project manager of Romanian Peace Institute, and Antonio, president of Young European Federalist. Hi guys, nice to meet you, nice to see you.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and my first question, is it your first time in Ukraine? And did you like this time?
Yes, of course. I always like to travel in Ukraine, actually.
Yeah, it's also my second time. And it was very special because this time in particular it was organized by Ukrainian organizations. So it was also a way to look into their eyes and to understand a bit better what's the sentiment here. And it was very inspiring.
Cool. And today we're going to talk about bridges between Ukrainian and in European youth, but from your own perspective. And my first question is, how would you perceive Ukrainian young people, especially in terms of war? And how do you think the relationship between Ukrainian and European youth has been changed right now?
I think that youth, from a European perspective, they have been incredibly active. I think that's has been an overwhelming part of my perspective. And well, I have to say that I manage a project that is sustaining civil society in Ukraine in different ways. And we work a lot with youth together with the Ukrainian Leadership Academy. And not only has the reaction of youth been incredible in sustaining society and sustaining the consequences of the full-scale invasion, but also civil society overall. But I have seen it coming a lot from youth, and that's incredibly empowering and I think inspiring for European audiences as well.
Have you ever worked with Ukrainian youth before invasion?
Yes, a bit, because with the Young European Federalists we've been working with Ukrainians for a long time, because for us Ukraine is part of Europe as much as Italy or Germany is part of Europe. And I remember that we started to trying to organize a branch in Ukraine, in particular doing more efforts after 2014, after the invasion. But what happened in the last year and a half has been incredibly strong, because everyone realized, in particular all European young people realized, how Europe and Ukrainians are European. And as Laura was saying, it was very inspiring to say the level of energy and commitment that young people, civil society put into this, how you were able to resist to the most traumatic situation. And I think there is also a lot to learn from us about also to rediscover the true meaning of what's the meaning of being European.
And when you say Ukraine is like part of Europe, you mean geographically or mentally or just by values?
I think culturally and socially, and also in sense of common values. When I think about identity, I think about something that is more towards, in particular, European identity. First of all, I think it's a plural concept. And then it's something that is looking more at the future. It's not just in the past. Everyone has his own diversities, his own differences, and sometimes it's also fun to find them out. But then it's important also why we wake up every morning, why we do what we do, what are our goals, what's the kind of society we want to live in. And my experience, I live in Brussels, and my experience in Brussels is that the very first day when the full-scale invasion started on the 24th of February, there was thousands of people already in the streets, and there were thousands of Ukrainians, because Ukrainians are already part of the European society. And the hard answer of all the young people also in the streets all across Europe was also a way to say, we are all on the same boat. We're all part of this. We feel that we've been invaded, and we feel that Ukraine has to be part of Europe because we need to preserve freedom and democracy.
Thank you. And thank you for your support. By the way, and speaking about like this full-scale invasion conditions, maybe for this time, which misconceptions about Ukrainian youth you faced with in informational space or in general between young people in your countries?
There are a lot of misconceptions about Ukrainians. I don't think there are a lot of misconceptions among young people about Ukrainians, or at least way less. And there is less prejudice, because it's also generational, and it is also part of what Europe is. Because I talked to a lot of my friends, and everyone had someone in Kyiv during the siege, or someone or some friend from Ukraine who was desperate because he was trying to understand what was happening to its own relatives, and someone who traveled to Ukraine for different projects, initiatives, or just for visiting this wonderful country. I mean, there was not this idea that it was something detached. It was part of our community that was it. And I think this explains also the big reaction that there was, particularly at the beginning. Then, of course, there is a lot of work to do. Then, of course, there is a lot of propaganda to dismantle. Then, of course, there is a lot of public discourse to face. There are very sensitive topics. We have to talk. We have to do also the not easy talk, for sure. But I think that if we focus on youth, it was smoother than it was maybe for less young generations.
Yes, I am Italian-Brazilian, so I have a puzzled identity myself, and I live in Romania. And what I have seen in the Eastern European space is that a lot of people and a lot of young people had a lot of empathy towards the situation that happened in Ukraine because of the troubled relationship that historically their countries had in Russia. Well, the war was the beginning of the invasion. I think that was a traumatic experience for Europe in different levels. Obviously for Ukraine, it was the most extreme experience possible. But in Romania, for instance, we had families calling their relatives in Germany saying, if they arrive to us, we will move to Germany, or we will pack our bags and we will apply for our passports so that we can leave. So I think that there was a lot of confusion, a lot of pain, and a lot of solidarity at the same time, because I moved to Romania from Georgia, where I was before, to support the Romanian Peace Institute's programming in Ukraine. We were doing humanitarian aid, and I saw Romanian civil society as well, but Romanian people and young people just lining across the streets of our institute, giving us things to bring to the border. And I think that it touched a very specific wound in people's hearts and in people's memories. And so I'm not sure if there were specific misconceptions at that time, and specifically about young people. But I think that that's also, it's not a specific misconception, but I think that people that started organizations and people that started working with Ukrainians understood some months after that we are not here to help Ukrainians. Ukrainians can pretty much help themselves. We're here to support. We're here to provide the structures, to give the microphone. But I think that may have been a misconception in some ways. You guys don't need our help, you know?
I'm impressed of this having goosebumps because of this. Thank you. Yes, I agree. And we were talking about all this like victim syndrome, victim image that we have, and a lot of it was in my mind, in my informational space, that a lot of European young people or like people in general, they consider ourselves like we are victims and we need only support and in different levels. And for this reason, I was thinking that we have like this gap between Ukrainian and European youth, that they don't understand us and we don't understand you because we only need a support. So it was so important to hear this thing from your own perspective. Thank you. And also you mentioned the like this trauma, these historical ties. And can we say that it can be, I don't know, background for building bridges between Ukraine and Europe, that we have common history or empathy or common trauma? Can it be a background for building bridges?
I'll try to strengthen what I was saying before. I think that when it comes to building bridges, it's very important to have good foundings. So in sense of starting with something really strong. And I think that the strongest thing that we have, we all have, and we've been reminded by Ukrainians. So I not only completely agree with what Laura and also you were saying, but I also add it. I think that sometimes it's also the rest of the European people that need help to remind themselves why we are talking about Europe. We are talking about Europe because we, pretty much every country in Europe has been an empire, and it's been a failed empire. And we have an imperialist and colonialist past. And we need to accept this. And we need to move beyond. And Europe is the alternative to this. And we need to fight against imperialism everywhere. And that's maybe the first cornerstone where to start from. And this is also connected with the values that we share. Because if we share inclusion, if we share democracy, if we share freedom, this is stronger than the level of, you know, bond that we can have just because we were born in the same city or just because we were born in the same country. I think this is something deeper that we can share. And I think that also a lot of the strong empathy that inevitably every European young people feel towards Ukraine is also connected to that, because we feel that we have this thing in common. And this is also, I think, what we experience also in these few days here in Kyiv with all the others coming from countries all across Europe, is that at the end of the day, where we came from is not so important. What is important is where we headed for.
Yes, I agree. Well, you mentioned Europe's imperialistic and colonialistic past and the necessity to move beyond this. And I think that that's incredibly important to head towards the future. At the same time, you cannot head towards the future without having the difficult conversations to heal from the past. So this is a very, very important thing that I don't think that European countries have done enough. We haven't. We can see that in Italy, when civil society organizations are criminalized, when they're helping people drawing in the Mediterranean. We are seeing it in France, where people are trying to do the same in a different context. Inclusion of Ukraine in the European Union and European integration has also to be a part of that. I think that perhaps that's a controversial topic and a difficult thing to tackle. But as a person that holds a European passport, for me, it's embarrassing that we have continued to trade and to engage and to hold conversations and hold interactions with the Russian leadership for a long time, where they have been crushing their civil society for 20 years. I think that the responsibilities of the full-scale invasion are placed in Putin's shoulders. But Europe in some ways have not given us enough strong response against the values of democracy that we stand for in other countries. And we have seen that now Europe is trading gas with al-Sisi, the president of Egypt. And he has been doing that with Egyptian civil society and activists as well. So we need to have these difficult conversations, and we need to deal with our own contradictions. And that's incredibly important.
I agree. And it's a good point that you mentioned about this colonialism and all this necessary but not very pleasant conversation. Yeah. But it can be another topic of another podcast, but of course I really totally agree. And unfortunately, we still have one empire that don't want to deal with their colonialism. And I have another question about tools, how to build these bridges. And we mentioned the international exchange, and you know that now we have a lot of restrictions, for example, for men, for boys in Ukraine because of martial law. And of course, a lot of young people, they went on front line or they consider the exchanges inappropriate during the war, but still we have. And what do you think, what is the value of this international exchange and how it can help now and after war to build these bridges and to help Ukraine and European youth?
Well, I think that international exchanges are incredibly valuable for a variety of different reasons. In the European Union and in the European space and outside, there are Erasmus programs that do that a lot. And I think that they are quite effective in different ways. Not that they cannot be made more effective and more inclusive, but they do that quite well. I think that it's important when we're talking about conflict and we're talking about war and invasion, the media has a very important role on how the reality is broadcasted outside. It's difficult for people to actually grasp the reality of what's happening in Ukraine. And youth exchanges actually bring people here. They bring people here to look at inside people's eyes and listen to their stories, to cook a meal together or to help rebuild their houses or to sit and drink and discuss about common ideas and to see very difficult scenes that we have seen in the previous days of civilian targets, of people who are extremely dedicated and at the same time extremely exhausted of having working for 1 year and a half without a vacation and with alarms that keep you awake at night. And the war is not an excuse to miss a meeting at night in the morning. So youth exchanges bring people closer to that. And they help bring a grasp of reality that you don't really get from actually, mainstream media. A lot of the young people that we have today are representatives of civil society themselves. And they are people who have potentially an audience and a way of multiplying what we have seen today.
Yeah, and there is one thing that is always very important about exchanges, international exchanges, is that it's the only way to see reality and to see the world from a different perspective and to get out of our own perspective. And I think this is always important. This is always important for everyone. And in particular, it's important in this dramatic situation. Because as Laura was saying, it's important to come here and to understand what you said before, is to understand that Ukrainians don't need help, do not need empathy or pity or something. They need support. And they need to feel that they're not alone. And so this thing also showing up, being present, it's very important. I always say that politics is being present. So what we are doing here is also a statement that people from the rest of Europe are coming here, are here. And I know that maybe there is a bit the sentiment that there are not enough Europeans volunteering in Ukraine. And I think it's I don't have the data. I guess it's true. I guess there is a lot to do. And I was thinking myself after this, coming for a few days, few weeks, it depends, to use part of my holidays coming here and just moving bricks, because this is what we can do. But again, being present is very important and bring a different perspective. Being here means give the possibility to establish the dialogue, because give possibility to building trust. And when there is trust, it's easier than to go into difficult topics, into difficult conversations, into, just learn better from each other, because you learn from someone you trust. You don't learn from someone you never seen, who showed up maybe on a screen sometimes or showed up only through a media. So that's very important. And I think that these exchanges need to be facilitated as much as possible in both directions, in sense of more people coming from the rest of Europe, and also as many Ukrainian young people as possible also going on the other side and bringing their perspective and understanding what's happening, and then meet in between. Because I think there are also some misconceptions about what's happening in the rest of Europe. Maybe
have your point of view changed when you visited Ukraine?
Yes, but I mean,
Maybe you have
not a lot, but yes, there was something that changed because I came the first time last year, end of September, always here in Kyiv and in Chernivtsi. I was expecting to be in a way more visually dramatic situation.
And being and so on, yes.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah.
Close to frontline or...
Of course.
Because of media...
Because of the media image. In a way, surprised and so hit emotionally by the willingness to live a normal life. And this is so powerful. And this is something that the media is completely not there. And this makes understand a lot about the war, a lot about the first message that we were addressing about, you know, this thing of it's not a matter of pity. No one needs pity, but support is different. And also this time we learned that we could work together with people who lost their houses and spend a day with them and helping them rebuilding their houses and sometimes also have a bit of fun with them, because at the end of the day, life is stronger. And 20 hours in the bus and the planes and whatever were worth it only just for those moments when you understand that life is stronger than anything.
Yeah, I would go as far as saying that there is no dialogue without trust. You cannot have dialogue without trust. I think that youth exchanges during conflict situations, during invasions, but I think that that's a critique on my side on the cooperation and development sector in general, is that they have to be done and they have to be crafted in a very, very much conflict sensitive way. Because we're not here to do war tourism, no? We're not here to bring these guys to Bucha and Irpin and Histomel and show the destroyed houses, you know? That's not the point.
But it's also important.
It's important for them to see it. And it's important for Europe to see it, and pressure for the war crimes to have accountability. But it has to be done in a very sensitive way. We are here to bring our hands and to bring our presence and to help with the most basic and human way that we can. We are here to talk to people, to hear their perspectives. We're here to ask Ukrainians what they want. What is the solution that they want? The solution is not coming from the outside. The solution is coming from Ukraine. I think that European exchanges, youth exchanges are extremely valuable, but they also have to be done in a very specific way so that they are effective, actually, and they bring the results that we want.
Can I add something on this? Because I think this is a very important topic. Yes. I give an example, a personal example of these days. You know, of course, I'm also coming from another organization, and they've been asking to me, send us pictures, tell us what you're doing, and etc. And of course, the kind of pictures that they expect is, again, the destroyed house.
Frontline and war guns.
Exactly, no? I feel it a bit diminishing. And said, of course, they need to see it, and they will. But it's just sending, oh, this is what I'm doing. I'm just doing another picture of some destruction. I don't think it's really the point. I think that the point is instead talking with a person, knowing the story of that place. I know there was a very nice discussion that we had also with the rest of the group. And it was one of the guys saying, understanding that that's not a destroyed house. That's someone's people's home. And understanding what's the story behind. And again, trying to talk with the people involved, talk with you. This is something that is not looking good in photos. It's not understandable just with a picture. This is where it's important, the present. And that's why I'm also thinking, how do I communicate this? I cannot just prepare a slide of pictures. And then I know, because there are people in my office that are asking, send us a slide of pictures, and I will. But it will be way harder, but also way more interesting to communicate what really means being here.
The first time that I entered Ukraine, that I went through the border, it was April last year. And I also had this reality shock on how life relatively normal, or at least in the appearance, life was normal in Chernivtsi. And we were walking in the main street. And it was a regular European city where families were holding their children's hands and going, having a walk and buying them sweets. And it was a very powerful experience for me, but also because in front of a very traditional restaurant, there was a man playing the piano. and he was playing typical Ukrainian songs. And we stood there and we watched people maybe stop, maybe sing along. And at a certain point, he started to play the Ukrainian anthem. And everybody in the street stopped. They stopped, they made a circle around the piano, they put their hands on their hearts, and they started singing. And that was, and I made a video of that. And for me, that was a very visual way, and I mean, you feel the energy in those moments, right? Of showing what freedom means for Ukrainians, what their independence means to them. And this is more important. And these moments of light, these moments of hope are often way more powerful. And I am maybe not here to say what's more important, but it's the core, it's the essence, it's what's truly important for the work that we do.
But it's very important to admit that Chernivtsi and Kyiv and even Lviv, they are quite peaceful cities. And of course, we have Bakhmut, we have Zaporizhia region, and we have a lot of occupied territories. Yeah. And we have territories where there are a lot of young people who are or under occupation or under the shelling and so on. So guys who were listening to us, you should understand that, of course, Ukraine, we are trying to live our normal life. And of course, we are trying to do everything, but we still have war. And we have all this dangerous situation. So yeah, but thank you for your just explanation and your experience. It's very important. You are welcome to Ukraine. But I'm curious, what else about Ukraine that people in your country know except war? What narratives are spreading about Ukraine except war and support and so on? Maybe something about history, culture, or I don't know, whatever.
I mean, sport. Sport is very well known from before. So Donetsk, Dnipro, Kyiv itself are very well known names because of football or basketball.
It was before.
It was before. Then it's a bit of a pity instead, because Ukrainian history is not known at all. And actually this conception that, yeah, it was all USSR, this is quite spread because we don't study it a lot. We're not focused on it a lot. To drop a name that is well known by who is listening from Ukraine, the historian Timothy Snyder, he's the first one to ever realize an old class on Ukrainian history in the US. And he did it beginning of September last year. This says a lot. And I also studied history myself. And I never studied the history of Ukraine. And I went through it once after the full-scale invasion and etc., just to, you know more. And I also myself was surprised, for example, from the origin and etc., and how fake, of course, this thing of the common origin with Russia is. And still now I go and talk to a lot of people and say, you know that one of the first kings and most important kings of Kyiv was actually Scandinavian, who was a Viking, basically.
It was one of the series, yes.
You know? Yeah, and of course I say it like just provoking, right? Just and people are like, oh, wow, because there is not a lot of knowledge. And yeah, apart from pop culture, I mean, Eurovision helps a lot. Eurovision Song Contest.
That's
so
true.
The song of 2021 is very good.
Okay, polished. Yeah.
But yeah, this is them.
Everything is because of, again, imperialistic influence that everybody consider us as a part, as a, I don't know, town of Russia, city of Russia, not like full country. And it's a pity. And we had this before invasion.
I wanted to say something about the other territories that have another war experience, just to give a quick reply to that. My examples have been Chernivtsi and Kyiv and Lviv, because unfortunately for now, those are the cities that I've visited. So those are the examples that I can say that I've seen with my eyes. But I've heard stories and that have not been in the media as they should have been. For example, I think it was last year where with the whole city down with no lights, people in Mariupol opening their windows and singing the Ukrainian anthem. People in Europe don't know about this. People in Europe don't know about the yellow ribbons in Kherson, about activists risking their lives to show even the tiniest bit of Ukrainian symbols, or teachers that are still trying to teach under the blankets, the Ukrainian curricula. There are lots of signs and concrete ways in which the Ukrainian society has resisted under occupation, and that's not visible outside. And that is part of the war experience that is not really seen. Or I've talked to young people. There was this girl that she's part of a union, and I talked to her last year, and she was so powerful and so amazing. And I don't think that she was any much older than me at all. And they were jumping into trains and evacuating people themselves, people with disabilities. You know, young people are risking their lives every day. And it's not to be romanticized. This sucks. Nobody in Europe, nobody in the world should be going through this. But I don't think that Europeans see that. I don't think that if you don't come, if you don't visit, if you don't share a cup of tea and hear their stories, there's something that's missing. You don't have this.
Just to add on this, I think that it's also, again, to add up on this topic on, of course, how dramatic the situation is, but still, there is a very strong commitment, a very strong willingness to move on, to strive, to get a victory, to be free. There's no despair and self-pityness. And I think that this is, I guess, with Lara, what we were trying to say, because also this part of the message is important to be understood, to be addressed everywhere else in Europe. And this is actually a lesson for everyone. A lesson that even if we all know what's happening more or less, etc., but we all know what's happening at the front line. What's happening at the front line is also the result of what's happening behind. And there are different levels of fighting a war. There are different levels of seeing it. There is hiding, and there is instead being proactive and trying to face what's coming. And this is the big lesson that you learn here. And this is why also this moment of normality are so powerful. And of course, if you're a civil society organization activist, you manage to see this, because of course we cannot go to the front line. But yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. And so to conclude all these things, because unfortunately we have lack of time, but I would rather to talk to you lots and make a special season about Europe and Ukraine and youth and in general about Europe and Ukraine. Yeah. You should think about this, because you are very good co-hosts. So, to conclude, what could you wish to Ukrainian youth and to European youth?
I am a project manager in a peace institute. I am a peace builder. My direct manager, his name is Kai Bryn Jacobsen. He said something very powerful, and that I repeat every time, every chance that I have, is that what we are working for is that in order to know what a soldier was, children will have to go to museums.
Yeah, and it's difficult to add something to this, honestly. So I will just try to stay in this. On the other side, what I wish to young people all across Europe is to remember the meaning of those museums. Because if there are those museums, it's because there's been people dying for those things staying in the museum, behind the glass. And this is what Europe is all about. Peace, democracy and freedom. And these are not for granted. Someone has to fight with them, someone with rifles, someone with ideas. And forgetting this is a loss for everyone.
And this is, I mean, just to complete, this is not a fight that's going to end. This is going to have to be a continuous fight.
Yeah.
We have a lot of work to do, and thank you for you and for Europe, for a lot of organization. We can do it together. Thank you guys for your attention. Thank you for your participation in this episode. And thank you, Ukraine Leadership Academy, for our special season. And you were listening to Gap Year podcast. All of them. Thank you, Laura and Antonio. Goodbye, and see you or hear you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.